This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 353 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me via Skype from Melbourne, once again from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Yep.
It's a bit like that, isn't it?
Oh, this day's been a week.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's been a long day, yeah. So it's just a bit wiped out tonight and a little low energy, but yeah, that might be a blessing for the listeners.
Yeah. Other than today, how's your week been? Your fortnight.
I had an interesting Friday, last Friday.
Right.
I went and photographed the D-Max performance driving thing.
Oh, of course. How did that go?
Well, it was shite.
Why?
Well, I'm no good at that stuff.
Getting outside your comfort zone, mate.
Completely. a couple of things. First up, it's really hard to plan a shoot when the guys doing the driving don't know what they're going to be doing from one trick to the next.
Right.
So knowing where to stand and where they're coming from, what they're even going to be doing, it's kind of hard to know.
So you've really got to wing it.
Because they were driving on an oval, which horses are. There's an agricultural show, so there's all these horses doing jumps and doing, and it would rained an awful lot, so the ground was really slippery.
Oh, okay.
So their very first performance, they had to go out and basically see what they could and couldn't do.
Right.
And they're doing that live as they're driving around. The lead driver's calling out over. You know, they're all wired up to listen to each other,
yeah.
And also to the guy who's doing the announcing,
yeah.
Calling out what the next routine's going to be. And then halfway through doing the routine before the next routine is just called out, he changes that as again. And they're calling three or four routines in advance, right? And then halfway through the three or four routines, there might be like one or two, and he's changing to third and fourth one. So it's just continually changing.
Wow. You know?
And so, yeah, that's pretty hard to know what to plan, to what kind of lens to be shooting at. and so their big finale on this particular episode was to jump, go over a ramp and jump over three Isuzu D-Max cars.
Right.
So that's what I was told was going to happen.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting, and they said, look, now these three cars will come in, and when they're in, the other one will come up the ramp and jump over the top.
Right.
So I'm stood there, I see the three cars come in, I've got three cameras, and all three are down.
Yeah.
Because they're moving into position, they're moving, and they're still moving, and they're not even just the front of the bonnets are just starting to go under the ramp, and all of a sudden I heard this revving engine of the other one coming up the ramp to do the jump.
Oh, no.
These things aren't even underneath it yet.
Oh, yeah. No.
And so all of a sudden, it's like, so all of a sudden, he's almost in the air before I've even had time to react.
Yeah, right.
I pulled up my camera with a 70 to 200 and got two shots away. Both perfectly in focus and nailed it.
Complete fluke.
Just what they failed to tell me is when they do the jumps, because they had guests in the cars with them.
Oh, okay.
So you know, some people had won some competitions and stuff. And whenever they've got people in the car, they don't let the car that's doing the jump over the actual cab of the car, just for safety's sake.
Right.
They jumped over the bonnet. So they weren't ever going to drive under the ramp.
Right.
Like, well, yeah, information that could have been handy 5 minutes ago. You know? So that was all kind of crazy. So that shoot was pretty tricky.
Yeah.
So you figure, okay, well, now I'm going to get myself – I've got a bit of an idea for the next one. Oh, and halfway through the first shoot, the car goes up into two wheels. Well, it fell over.
I saw that.
The ground slid out from underneath it and fell over. So then we've got – we're all trying to push it back over, and then we had to call people from the audience to help push the car.
Oh, wow.
So, of course, I did the right thing, as any photographer would do, is refuse to push and take photos instead.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the ground was just – it just slipped out from underneath the car.
Yeah, right.
So then the second session, you think, okay, I've got a bit of a handle on it. Well, they did nothing the same.
Oh, okay.
As the first session, nothing was the same. So right. Everywhere they and then the third session, I finally got, okay, I've got this. It's now nighttime. I'm shooting at 20,000 ISO.
Oh, wow.
To get 1/100 of a second shutter speed.
Yikes.
Now you try and freeze a car jumping over other cars at 1/100 of a second shutter
speed. Nah, not going to happen. But you should have got some nice sense of movement, though, with some blurred background.
Only if you're in the right position to get it.
Oh, okay.
If you're in a position,
were they coming straight towards you, were they?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So it was kind of, the important thing is the client. I said their response was bloody love them for the photos I supplied them.
Cool.
But I'm going, oh, I'm not doing that again.
Luke, word of warning, mate. A bit more info for the photographer.
No, well, it was fair because they had no idea what the ground was like. Yeah, it's not like running on a normal track where they could plan anything. It was their first time. So I totally understood. Everything they were saying made perfect sense.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make it any easy for the guy trying to do the shoots.
Yeah.
But I've got some usable shots.
Oh, well. As long as they were happy with what you gave them, then, you know, and I guess you had a good time even though you were struggling with it.
I had a bit of fun, a bit of a laugh.
So that's good.
And next year they're getting some new cars, and so they'll be doing a driving day, a test day.
Yeah, right. So
maybe it might be an opportunity to get a bunch of photographers to go along and have some fun.
It'd be good to get, you know, the photographers there during the test day so you can kind of get your head in the right space for what to expect.
Well, the good thing about the test day is they repeat the same manoeuvre over and over and over and over again. So, of course, you've got plenty of opportunities. Okay, this is what they're doing. This is where they'll be. Yeah. And what I wanted to do, they do this thing where they go up and they go over these little kicker ramps.
So to get them up on two wheels.
Yeah, but only goes up for like a second. So just right up and then fall down. It's nothing too dramatic. But they're really close to each other. And they do two lines. And, well, I wanted to lay in between them and take the photo of them going either side of me. But they wouldn't do it at a show. This is too...
Too much risk.
Yeah, but I want to do it like the test day. And then there's another one where all four cars cross over each other at high speed, like 100k an hour.
Wow.
And then it's high speed. Well, I want to stand in the middle and they all go around me.
You love living on the edge.
So that's where you're going to get the interesting shots, though, isn't it?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that's the kind of the goal. So I said to you, I took it on. For A, getting out of your comfort zone, which is a great thing to do as a photographer.
Yep.
B, the experience, bound to have a bit of fun. I wasn't doing anything else anyway, so go out and have a nice day out. And C, you never know where the contacts lead you.
Yeah, yeah, taking
opportunities at sea, you never know what's going to come of things. So, you know, and they were never going to, and you're not taking money from a paying photographer's job because they were never going to pay anyone to do the job anyway.
Yep.
If no one showed up, they wouldn't have. It would have been the end of the world.
Right.
So it was just a fun day out. But I said it certainly teaches you how little you know about photography. So I'm shooting with three cameras.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
I had three cameras around my neck, a 5, a 6, and a 7 D from Canon.
Right.
And I had a 15 to 30 on one, a 70 to 200 on the other, and a 150 to 600 on the other.
Whoa.
So, I mean, I'm carrying, I don't know why I had a neck ache that day. It was really weird. Because once again, they're on this massive oval, and sometimes they're doing stuff a long way away. You can't just race up and down there when you have no idea what they're going to be doing. So hence the 150 to 600 came in very handy.
Really? That surprises me. I was about to say I can't imagine you'd have got much use out of the 150 to 600.
Yeah, probably that was probably the second most used lens.
Wow. So the wide got used the least?
Yeah, funnily enough, because they wouldn't let me get close enough.
Yeah, right.
It would have been the best shots. But they wouldn't let me. But this is one point where there's cars coming at me on two wheels and three cars driving up behind it. And I'm backing up, literally right in front. I'm backing up as fast as I can down this oval, hoping I don't trip over because this car's coming straight at me. I'm shooting. So it was a good fun day out.
Oh, excellent.
It's good to push the boundaries and photograph things that you don't have control of.
Yeah, for sure.
Just part of where the fun of street photography often lies is you don't have a lot of control. So
yep.
Anyway, that was excellent. That's all I've done photographically the last 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah, nothing.
Wow.
My wife's been away. My wife only got back on. She's been away, so I haven't been doing much work.
Yeah.
I've been looking after the kids. She got back on Monday night, and now she's away again. It's Thursday now.
So, I thought she was away for work.
No, she went away for a holiday.
From you.
Now she's away for work.
Holiday from you, apparently.
Oh, man. I went to England with some friends.
I saw all the photos on Facebook. Yeah,
so she went off.
At this famous landmark, at that famous landmark.
But here's the thing. So we've been together 19 years, almost 20 years, 20 years next year, and it's the first time she's ever done anything just for herself.
Good on her.
Something big. Something completely selfish and big, and it hasn't revolved either me and her doing it or – me and the kids or whatever, so it's good. It's a liberating thing for us.
Nice.
So very pleased. But now she's away for work and that's really annoying.
Yeah.
And while she's away, she tells me, oh, I've got to go away again. It's going to be whilst I'm away on my next trip. That kind of causes dramas and fun.
Yeah, right.
All fun and games.
Wow.
Of course, as any wife of a photographer would, she took lots of photos with her phone and nothing else while she was away.
Yeah.
Just about the case.
All selfies.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what have we got in our little list of stuff? I do mean little list of stuff tonight. Yeah.
All right. Well, we heard from Tony White, who sent us an interesting link to petapixel.com about McFun, who are coming out with a new product called Luminar, which is like Lightroom for dummies.
LRFD.
That's right. Yes. This looks very interesting. It's meant to be, as they describe it themselves, it's a one photo editor fits all kind of software. So basically it's a raw conversion engine, so it will, you know, do all your raw processing for you, but it's meant to be a simpler interface than Lightroom. So, you know, yeah, I mean, you just kind of got to have a look at the screenshots to see how simple it appears to be. It's going to come out on the 17th of November, and it'll be $50 for pre-existing registered McFun users and $60 for non-registered users. So it's not hideously expensive. It's certainly a hell of a lot cheaper than Lightroom. And it'll be interesting to see when it ships.
Hey. So, but well, they've got a bit of history, so they're not like, you know, fly-by-nighters or whatever.
No.
So,
and I mean, you know, $50 or $60 is not a hell of a lot to lose, even if you decide it's not really for you.
Yeah.
Presumably, there will be a trial period where you can download it and run it for, I don't know, a few days or a week or something, and, you know, have a trial.
We can only imagine, yeah. They can't imagine they wouldn't do anything.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's very interesting. And the other one from Tony was a thing called Keegan, which is a web-based photo critiquing website. So essentially you upload your photos to Keegan and Keegan the photo coach analyzes your image and gives you real-time feedback on the website.
Is it a real person?
No.
Oh.
It's all AI.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And what I thought was interesting is that there's a paragraph here that says, to test Keegan, we showed it a photo of Obama and the Dalai Lama captured by White House photographer Pete Souza. Keegan wasn't very impressed, criticizing the lighting and the distracting background.
Well, I agree. I've seen the photograph. The photograph sucks.
Yeah,
just because it's done by somebody who's famous and it's of two famous people, don't make a good photograph. Have you seen the photo?
Oh, I have seen the photo.
It sucks.
Yes.
There's a bloke standing in the background. There's a great big highlight on the wall, yep. You know. It's. I mean, I'm sure the moment's nice, but the photo doesn't have to be.
Capturing a moment, and that's pretty much all it is. It's documentation. It's not necessarily great image.
So, is it free or is there a cost?
As best as I can tell, it's free. You can just...
Oh, we should all go do it. See who gets the best score.
Yeah. Dear. So, Tony was suggesting that we should have you submit some of your photos to it and see what it comes
done.
Back
with. If it's free, I'm going to do it live. Here we go. Keegan, the photo coach. There we go. As we speak, let's have a look here. I'm going to go to here. I hope it's not too big.
When you do submit your image, make sure you email that image through to me so I can put it in the show notes.
I'm uploading one as we speak. It's got, here we go. Well-placed subject, good detail, and nice timing. A very pleasing image. This gets 7.3 out of 10. Everything is so perfectly framed that you get a framing ribbon. Oh, look at that, a ribbon. Yay, that's my first ever award. I've won an award. I can now claim an award-winning photographer. What did you win? I won a ribbon for well framed. That's a very decent photo for a start. Can you show me something even better? Oh yeah, let's just try another photo here. Let's just see what it comes up with.
That's excellent.
This could be just fun for hours, you know. You could do this for hours, couldn't you? Here we go. So it's uploading live as we speak. At least it's fast, you know.
Yeah.
And we were worried we couldn't fill an episode today. We could do this for half an hour. Here it goes. What a moment! Strong idea, intriguing subject. This photo is all right. Congrats, you get a 7.7 out of 10. But hang on a sec. Didn't win a ribbon.
No.
Didn't
and yet you got a higher score than the first one.
I know, and no ribbon. Yeah, what on earth is going on?
It's a moving average, mate. You set the bar too high on your first go.
Yeah, I'll do one last one. There we go. It's loading. Thinking about it. Little. Oh, there we go. Pleasant lighting. Great. Nice timing and good place for your subject. Simple, but it's good. A solid 7.1 out of 10. Look, I'm a 7 sort of photographer. Now you've got the idea. Feel free to send me as many photos as you want. I'll be glad to comment on them and give you my feedback. After 10 pictures, I'll evaluate your level. Oh, here we go.
Well, make sure you send me those 3 images.
I will. Excellent. And we can all have a laugh.
Oh, dear. So anyway, we heard from Rakesh this week. Yes, and he sent us a link to magazine.good.is. Sounds like Icann has cheeseburger. And this was, I saw this, I reckon, a couple of years ago. This is not a new story. And it's about a camera set up by MIT, I think it was, from memory, where they were frame rate was something like a trillion frames a second. I don't know how they actually accomplished that.
Who counted? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, exactly. But essentially what they've done is fired photons of light into like a soda bottle full of water. Yeah. And you can actually see the light travel through the water and hit the end of the bottle, and then it all blooms and then it bounces back, and so it's all super, super, super slow motion. It's interesting to watch, but I'm not sure about some of the numbers inside the story. There's a reference to, you'll see experimental footage of light photons traveling 600 million miles per hour through water.
Jesus.
Now, I'm not sure that those numbers are correct. The speed of light is actually 300,000 meters per second.
They're kilometers.
No. Speed of light is 300,000 meters per second. Kilometers. Well, you're saying it's 300,000 kilometers per second.
Yeah. 327 or something.
Okay. What I looked up came in at just under. It was like 299 and change.
But kilometers, not meters.
But it was kilometers, not meters. Okay. All right. So maybe the numbers are right.
That's quite a difference.
Yes, it is.
Meters and kilometers.
Yes, it is. But I thought what I looked up said meters per second, but maybe I read it wrong.
That's because you're an idiot.
Maybe. Anyway, the video's there for those that want to have a look. Hey?
299,792,458 meters a second.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So I got it wrong.
But it's 186,000 miles a second, according to.
Right.
So it's pretty fast.
It is.
I'm going to give it that. I'll say that much for it. It goes pretty quickly.
It certainly does. So, yeah, so it's an interesting video to watch anyway. I don't know how they achieved it, but, yeah, it's pretty funky. Adam Davidson and David Marland both sent us a story about a customized version of a Nikon D5500. And this thing has a specially modified sensor which has a cooling mechanism applied to it to help reduce the noise when you're shooting long exposures. So basically, you know, when you leave a shutter open for a long period of time, the electric signal flowing through the sensor causes heat to build up in all the photo sites, and that heat transference between photo sites is what causes the random, you know, discolored pixels in an image. And so obviously the longer you leave it, the hotter it gets, and therefore the colors, you know, the color noise gets worse. So these guys have come up with this idea of cooling the sensor, with this heavily modified camera during long exposures to stop that heat transference occurring. What I found interesting was the sample image included in the link. It actually shows the same image shot, you know, with the cooling running and without the cooling running. And the decrease in the noise is significant. So it's an interesting concept, but it's a very expensive concept.
Yeah.
So this thing is available, but at a price of 2,190 euros.
Ooh.
Which, as David Marland then said in his email, that works out to something like 3,183 Australian dollars.
Ooh.
The camera itself in its standard form is about $800. So
it's just somewhat X-y, isn't it?
It's a significant increase over the stock price, but I guess if you're into your astrophotography or things where you yep. take a lot of really long exposures.
But are people doing lots of long exposures these days, or they're all just doing image stacking?
I don't know.
Okay, just checking.
There's probably still, you know, a lot of people out there who love their 10-stop and 12-stop filters and are quite happy shooting, you know, really long exposures. I don't know. It's an interesting concept. I think, you know, it's a great execution to come up yeah. with, you know, a cooling mechanism for a sensor. And the article talks about how they had to employ an anti-dew mechanism within the cooling system as well to stop the buildup of moisture from the cooling process. So, yeah, very interesting stuff. David Marland also went on to say that I did a bit of a comparison with an Australian retail astro site to see what this means, and he's got a link which I'll include in the show notes, and looked at the Atik, A-T-I-K, 4000 color CCD, which to yeah. me looked like a basic color recording CCD device for a telescope. Now, the modified Nikon D5500 at 2420 US, translates to about 3183 Australian, has a 23.5 by 1.5 24 megapixel APS-C sensor with pixels each 3.92 microns in size. By comparison, the Atik 4000 color CCD is 5,599 Australian dollars and has a 15 mil by 15 mil sensor with 4 megapixels of resolution. So bang, you know, for your buck, the modified Nikon is a much better price.
Yeah.
So, yeah, someone else might know a lot more about astro imaging, and I've just grabbed info on the first site I know, but it means that on face value, the Nikon's pretty competitive. Probably needs some sort of converter for the telescope, but there's still a fair bit of savings for that. The conversion looks like a one-way situation, meaning you can't then take the fan out of the back of the Nikon and use it as a normal camera. They also do a few things to the sensor filter to make it more sensitive to astro requirements. Food for thought. Well, thank you, David. And while we're talking about David Marland, we should probably go to his book review. This week, The Weekend Photographer. Take it away, David.
Thanks, Bruce. John Van Putt is not a professional photographer. In fact, he confesses to not wishing to become a professional photographer. He's actually a business consultant through the week and photographs on weekends and on long holidays. He uses photography to maintain a sense of balance as a way of escaping from the day-to-day grind of his everyday job. He says that there's something special about standing alone on an isolated beach or perched on a mountaintop, waiting for the light to change from dark and subdued to a rich glow as it spreads over the landscape. Well, frankly, I can relate to that, and I think a few people that are listening probably can too. John is Sydney-based and has made a book of his photographs, and it's published by New Holland. It was first published in 2012 and is over 250 pages of his photos. He's headed it with the chapters Cities, Nature, Seascapes, HDR, Night, Landscapes, Sepia and Monochrome, Sunsets and Storms. And although John's Sydney-based, he's widely travelled, and that's reflected in the selection, although I note that all the seascapes are Australian and nearly all near Sydney. The photos are of a good standard and the subjects are widely varied, although for me some of the HDR is a little overdone. Each page has a group of three photographs with a commentary and the metadata on the capture of the photographs. Overall, this is a book that says if you're keen and dedicated to your art, you can do something like this too. And again, like some of the travel books I've mentioned, this could be a good starting point for different places you might want to visit. He also includes some handy hints. For example, his photograph of Paris looks down on the Eiffel Tower rather than up at it. He describes how to get to this vantage point for a completely different view of the city. The book, as I said, was first published in 2012. It's a paperback, and it's a high-quality paperback, and it's still widely available. It ranges from about $30 to $35, depending on whether you go to Booktopia or the Book Depository, and Amazon have it for $19.99 US plus postage. Cheers.
Excellent. Thank you for that.
Very interesting. He's a lovely man, that David. Yes. Not for you. I zoned out after it said David Marlin.
I should have guessed. And we heard from Rob Coates.
Did we?
Yes, who took issue with our last episode.
Yeah, I know. That's why I chose to ignore it.
Because we completely missed the intent of his last email. He says, well, boys, you're going to need to stand up while you're doing the podcast because some of the feedback's going over your heads. Was I genuinely seeking advice on buying a camera and or how to take better photos? No. I was taking the piss out of you and anyone else who drools over the latest Sony or whatever just because it's the latest Sony and has 399 focus points instead of 398. A clue was in the subject line of my email, bright, shiny things. Contemplating paying $5,000 to buy a potentially underutilized camera that will replace the current underutilized camera may require some further mature thought, Bruce. I'll continue to use my D7000 until it isn't sufficient for what I'm trying to do, which I agree, Glenn, will be a long time, if ever. Meantime, try to remember you're not the only ones who use sarcastic remarks to make a point, and thinking about a photo for 10 minutes before I take it? Give me a break. Regards, Rob. I had a good chuckle at that. Thank you,
I'll
Rob.
I'll say this. Sarcasm is predominantly a spoken form.
Yes. Yes.
And he didn't use a font to denote the tone. Rickety, font. Tickety, too. A friend of mine wrote a song about he invited this girl to marry him by letter, and she said yes. So he planned this massive thing, and she never showed. And the song's called Rickety Tickety 2, and it goes on, rickety, rickety, tickety, on and on and on. And then he went and tried to find her out and find out why she didn't show, and she goes, well, I was joking, you know. I was being sarcastic. You know? You didn't really think I was going to show up, did you? And he goes, well, look, sarcasm's predominantly spoken form, you know. And he didn't use a font to denote your tone. You know? How am I supposed to have known when you wrote it such depth and detail?
Which font should one use to convey sarcasm?
Oh, sarcasm.net, I guess. I don't know. that's all I'm going to say. Sarcasm.
Okay.
Dominantly spoken form.
A valid point, Rob.
But it's also a very funny song.
Right. We'll take your word for it because none of us have heard it.
And think about the photo for 10 minutes. Hell yes. If you're shooting 1 out of 10 that you like, hell yes.
Right.
And that goes for me too. Every one of us. Goodness sake. We all shoot too much.
Next time you're shooting those Isuzu D-Max utes, mate, I want you to take 10 minutes to think about the shot before.
Mate, you think about for 10 minutes when you get there about what are you trying to achieve?
Yeah.
How are you going to achieve it? Yeah. Where do you need to be to achieve it? What kind of gear do you need? That's taking time.
Yeah.
You don't just jump in and start shooting and hope.
No.
Because, yeah, you'll get the results you expect. Yeah.
What do you got on your list?
Nothing, have I? I have something on my list, do I? So I've been busily uploading photos to this Keegan's. I got up to a 9.4.
And oh,
it said,
really?
It says, congratulations, you're an enthusiast photographer. if you want to become a semi-pro, keep submitting photos and have an average of over 7.5.
Have you not got an average above 7.5 yet?
No, I haven't submitted enough photos yet.
I see. You haven't submitted 10.
I did see one thing, and this is going to Carl Hemmings in some way, because you know, we derided the Nikon 105 1.4.
Yeah.
And then lauded, because I'm sponsored by the Tamron 185. Yeah. I thought I'd point out a Nikon lens.
Right.
Or a Nikon primary. They announced a 19mm tilt shift this week,
right,
which just looks the bomb. Just looks awesome. So, I mean, yeah, if you're into your architectural photography, you know, Canon's had a lot of sway over a long time for some fabulous tilt shift gear.
Yeah.
And it's just nice to see Nikon really just nailing and that really beautiful wide angle and having tilt shift capabilities.
Yep.
That would be so much fun to play with.
Yeah.
So much fun to play with. So that was kind of cool.
Nice.
And then I came across, we've been talking about travel and storage and all sorts of stuff. And a guy was coming to Myanmar with me this week, emailed and said, oh, I'm thinking about buying one of these Western Digital portable storage things. I know, like you talk away. Have you had any people, do you know anyone's had any involvement with that product? And what do you think? So I didn't really know what to say because, like, oh, dear.
He wasn't talking about the wireless one, was he?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, that you got. Yeah. So I wasn't really sure sort of what to say to him. And but then,
I know a guy's got two of them. Loves them so much he bought it twice.
Oh dear. But that brought me, because by some chance, then I also straight away, almost like within an hour of that, came across a Kickstarter project for a new device, a new upload a travel security device.
Okay.
And where's it going to turn? That was the Flash Porter, which was kind of good. It's one of the few I've seen with a built-in screen.
Yeah, right.
So you can actually see live. Yeah, I'm not sure how useful that is these days when a lot of the new devices you can sort of link in with your phone.
Yeah.
And see that the images are on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is that one more thing to chew up batteries? But that's made me have a look at the thing we looked at earlier this year, the Narbox.
Okay.
If you remember, and that was like that ruggedized, weatherproof, which right. I thought was awesome. I thought, oh, that's, I wonder what's happening with that. So I went onto their website, and they're saying pre-ordered still for September delivery.
Oops.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what's happening there. There's a lot of this new stuff there. But I thought that was, it's a whole new world of this travel storage. It's just going to explode, I think, you know.
Unlike you, I don't see the need for a screen on a device like that, because really all you want is to be able to back it up so you know you've got a second copy, you know, or you're just backing up, you know, and that's going to be your only copy because you need to wipe your cards and use them again. But I don't see why you would need to view those images on that device, because surely you're really just using that until you get home and you can download to your computer and do your post-processing and whatever, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Me personally, I can't imagine myself ever sitting there wanting to view those images on the backup device. That's just me.
Yeah, I mean, I think just adding extra cost, having that screen there, can only add cost to it, which would be, you know. But it's interesting, you can buy it in all sorts of, like 512 gigabyte, a terabyte, or 2 terabyte storage.
Oh, nice.
Which is kind of cool. But the 2 terabytes when traveling would be kind of handy, wouldn't it, if you're traveling for a long time.
And it comes in both optical drive versions and SSD versions.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
So much. Because some people travel for a very long time. I had someone inquire this week for Cuba Tours about to be launched for sale.
Yep.
And just waiting for the brochure to be finished. And this woman emailed, and I thought, she goes, she'll make her own way there. So I just thought I'd look her up, bit of stalking.
Yep.
And her and her family of 6 have been traveling since 2014.
Wow.
And of those 6 or 4 fairly young kids, I'm thinking, and they're currently in Mexico or something at the moment.
Wow.
It's a fairly committed journey with that many children.
Yeah.
Know?
Obviously homeschooling.
Oh, yeah, I'd imagine so. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was, quite a journey they're on. So that was kind of cool. So storage devices. Yeah, so if you are traveling for a long period of time, don't want to be lugging around a computer.
Yeah.
Not a bad one. You can still do your phone to do your Facebooking and stuff and all that kind of stuff. And then finally, I found a way to shoot like Ansel Adams.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Someone's selling one of his cameras.
Wow.
So you buy that.
It's a squeeze box. You can play songs on it as well.
Take the same photos. You can take the same quality of photos as Ansel Adams, finally. Forget all these courses. Now, people spent tens of thousands of dollars going to universities and stuff studying photography.
Yep.
This is like about $45,000 starting bid. Buy that instead.
35.
Yeah, plus it's
buyer's premium.
It's another $9,000 on top of that.
Yeah.
So,
For those who are interested, an Arca Swiss 4x5
There you go. Yeah, and you and you get and you get to take photos of Ansel Adams and sell those photos for a fortune. So you'll recoup the money on the camera pretty quickly.
Yeah.
When you think about it. Yeah, you know, it's not going to take that long, especially if it has his watermark in the bottom.
That's right. Oh, dear.
And yeah, the other week we were talking about the new Karma drone from GoPro.
Yeah.
And then a few people, I was talking about
the, you mean the UAV?
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah.
What's that mean? Unarmed vehicle.
What's it stand for? Unmanned aerial vehicle.
I don't drone on.
boom, boom.
I was talking to my mate Mike Holman this week because I'm going to New Zealand end of February to hang out with him for a week to take photos.
Nice.
I want him to train me in some landscape skills.
Right.
Don't know why, but
no.
But also he knows a mate who's a fly fishing guide and he might take me fishing.
Oh, cool.
it could be the other part of the deal. Yeah. So I talked to him and he said, oh, check out the DJI Mavic, their new one as well. I hadn't seen that. And that's a seriously cool looking piece of kit as well.
Right.
And it's got a couple of big advantages over the Karma.
Right.
And that in one is that it has anti-collision things. So it doesn't fly into stuff.
Yep.
Which is pretty cool. And it has that tracking system that follows you.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I thought there was had a guy running down the beach as an example, and it was tracking along.
And 27 minutes of continuous flight time.
Yeah, that's right up there.
That's huge.
It is for a drone, and the battery's only like $90, so you could afford to have a few.
Yeah, right.
$90 US. But this thing coming in, and it's really small. There's a picture of it next to a GoPro. Now, you know how small a GoPro is.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, it's significantly bigger than that, but it couldn't be much bigger than a normal-sized DSLR.
Yeah, right.
Thing. So, it's 4K video footage and 12-megapixel photos.
Yeah.
And I was watching this footage done with it, and it's in midair, and you'd swear that it's on a tripod.
Yeah, right.
So it's just perfectly stationary.
Yep.
And you'd swear it's attached to something. There's not an iota of movement on this thing.
Right. There's a guy who is another lynda.com author over in the States, a guy called Jeff Foster, and he has really got into the whole, you know, drone photography thing in a big way.
Mate, it's called UAV.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for correcting me on that. And he's, you know, teaching courses in, you know, drone photography, and he's writing as we are speaking, you know, in the last 40 or 24 hours or so, he's been showing some images on his Facebook profile of these 360-degree panoramas shot from a UAV.
Wow.
And they are phenomenal, and they're printing them off at 44 inches off a massive Epson printer, and they just look stunning.
Man.
Yeah. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, if you get it of a high enough quality, absolutely. It's remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'll send you a
friend link so you can check out the images.
Dude, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
It's a whole new world, isn't it?
Oh, totally.
Crazy, crazy stuff. But this thing's, it's a $999 US, about $1,700 Australian.
That's pretty reasonable given what you're getting.
Considering what it can do, exactly, yeah. And once again, that's got the camera built into it already. So, it's
4K video at 30 frames and 1080p video at 96 frames a second. So you can get some nice slow-mo stuff.
Yeah, and they're sort of saying for the beginner, it's the perfect thing because it does so much work for you. It's just so easy to shoot with. So
wow.
Yeah, that could be a pretty cool tool. So it'd be nice to take one of those on tour.
Mm.
Something like that. Very, that's all I got for the week, my friend.
Okay.
It's a short episode.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it. Here we go. It's unique, but I like it, and your timing is amazing. Pretty good shot. Without a doubt, a 7.9 out of 10. It's pretty depressing when you get all that. Wonderful. You've reached the semi-pro photographer level. There is still room for improvement. Keep working hard to reach the professional level. You must achieve an average score of 8.5 over your 50 best pictures. There you go. So I've given it a full test. Yeah.
So you've submitted 10 images?
Yeah, except, no, that's 25, that was.
Oh, what?
But here's the thing. you put one in there, it's got, I really love this particular pick because it's got this really, really subtle, almost no colour to it. It's almost monochrome, right, as the sun dries. And it goes, oh, really nice, but the colours are uninspiring. It's like, well,
that was the intent.
Then there's this flash shot. And it's like, oh, I really like the shot, but maybe this is a time to explore using your flash. So it struggles, but yeah, I'm semi pro, you know. It's up there, and some of them we want to put in the Hall of Fame. So right. You know, there's some of the best shots it's ever seen. Yeah, you know, 9.5 or something like that, you know. I don't know, a bit of fun maybe. Keegan's Hall of Fame. Wonder what you're going to need to get. So the thing, I think with any of these things, you find out what pleases the
algorithm
system. Yeah, and but there we are on the front page. I've got three images on the front page now.
Nice.
three out of the top 25.
Excellent.
It's a little old man. That in my book is almost 10%.
Yep.
So what have you got planned for the week? Anything exciting? Are you going to do any photos?
Well, I shot a wedding last weekend.
Did you? You didn't talk about that.
I did.
Did
that's
you?
Why I had the week, that's why we had the week off.
No, we didn't talk about it in the podcast.
No, we didn't.
How'd you go?
Okay.
We're all friends here, Bruce.
Yeah.
Just tell us what went wrong. Can you show us some photos?
We're all friends until you see the images and and then you get nasty.
Jaden and
Beck are very happy with what they've seen so far.
Well, that's a good start.
So that's
which is better than, just to interject, a friend of mine photographs old people, and she took this photograph of this old couple, like the 60th wedding anniversary, and the woman asked for three of her three shots because she needed to get them up pretty quickly. So she sent her three best ones. The woman responds straight back, oh, is that the best you got? Yikes.
Ay, ay, ay. Ooh, that hurts.
The best reply, isn't it?
No.
So they're happy with the images.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to go through everything yet. I sort of went through all the stuff that I'd shot last night and just rated with one star the images that I'll, you know, go back and have a second look at. And I'll then, you know, rate the best of those up to a two star, and I'll just gradually whittle those down. I haven't had a chance to look through the stuff that Darren shot for me yet, but we shot very conservatively. We shot about 1,500 images for the whole day.
Between two of you? That's
between the two of us.
Stage,
yep. I think Darren has in the past shot a lot more during a wedding, and I'd said to him, you know, I personally try to be very conservative with my shutter count, not because I'm stingy with storage or anything like that, but I just try and get the shot straight up, you know, rather than just machine gun style.
Yeah.
So I shot just under 500 images and he shot 1,100 or thereabouts. So.
Wow. So he shot, 2 to 1.
Yeah. Wow. So, but I haven't gone through his images yet, but I don't know. I'd been around the venue a month ago and, you know, so I knew what I was working with, and at the time it all seemed like, oh yeah, I'm loving this, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then when it actually came to the day, I was kind of struggling with it, to be honest.
So sometimes that's why it's good to go there without seeing the venue.
Yeah, right.
Because imagine if you'd gone there and on the day shooting the wedding, you felt, oh, wow, this is great.
Yep.
And shot what you were feeling.
Yep.
Rather than going back on second look, oh, yeah, that wasn't quite what I, yeah, all of a sudden you're second guessing yourself and all that sort of stuff. So maybe, I don't know, maybe there's an advantage in not seeing the venue before.
maybe. Yeah. Maybe I'm just being harsh on myself. I don't know.
Oh, we all are. We know that's what we do, isn't it? You know?
So yeah, so I will endeavour to pull out four or five images for next week's episode, and I'll get those through to you, and then you can critique them.
Okay, but you're not happy to do that in the caring, sharing, loving way that we do.
That you do with the knives out, Oh, you got your kitty cat back?
No.
Oh, I thought I could hear the kitty cat purring.
There's a helicopter or something about to go.
Oh, is that what? It's a very big kitty cat.
It's a big. He's up pretty high, too.
Yeah, right. I can hear it through Skype. All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
I will. You too. And we'll see you on the flip side.
Definitely.
Take care, mate.
See you, mate.
Bye. All right, everyone.
ShutterZinkPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioToYou.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZinkPodcast.com.